Welcome back, guys. DGS, time to talk to your pal, Ricky Horton. How you doing today, Rick?
I'm doing great, Dave. How about you?
Not too bad, my friend. So let me tell you why I am optimistic about the season, and you see where you agree or where you want to make some changes. You know how when you're down 3-0 and you score 3 runs and you go, okay, boys, it's a brand new ball game. It's all even. It's nothing. That's how I feel right now. The first quarter of the season sucked. The second quarter was phenomenal, and we're back to even. Well done. Good. We're down 3-0. Now we're 3-3. I feel that with getting guys like Newt Barr and hopefully Edmund back, that we're no longer cobbling together a roster. We're making hard choices because we have too many good guys. I think that's a huge swing. I think that Arenado and Goldschmidt, even just mathematically, even just the law of averages, that they're going to play up to the back of their baseball card. And then finally, the pitching. I feel like we're having bad outings, but we're not having bad pitchers. And that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I would agree with everything that you just said. And the reality is the start was terrible. And we had kind of everybody doing poorly at the same time, which is a bad place to be other than the bullpen. But, you know, you've got guys, you got Mason Wynn and Alec Burleson at the top of the lineup. They've been really fun to watch. And I think what that's done is it's taken off the pressure from a guy like Arenado and Goldschmidt to just let them be themselves. They don't have to kind of carry it all on their own. And I think ultimately they're going to get numbers similar to what has been on the back of their baseball card. I think the guy you're most kind of concerned about is Nolan Gorman. And this is a great ballpark for him to hit in here in Pittsburgh. And I hope he kind of figures something out with the off day yesterday. You know, you really want to get that going. One other thing I'd say, the Cardinals are using several arms up from AAA, and they've all been good. Roycroft has been good. Griseppo was good. Kloppenstein was good. We've got Bociovic here now, and I haven't seen him yet. But the point is, the bullpen's getting deeper too, and that may help those guys who've been pitching an awful lot.
It's a fascinating thing, Rick. I mean, I think I'm kind of where Dave is in terms of so many things have gone wrong, and yet you're in this position where you're 3 games above .500. You haven't been healthy all year. You know, your 2 biggest, highest paid stars have not been close to their normal production. So I think that is the reason why I'm happy with where they are. They could be better, and I think there's a really great argument to say that they will be better, assuming decent health the rest of the way. I am really worried about Nolan Arenado, though. I'm not sure that it's mental or physical. I don't know that, but I'm worried that this is kind of tracing back to like late August of last year.
Yeah. No, his home run output has certainly not been as good. Now he's hit more home runs on the road than he has at home. I don't know if there's some kind of a reality to that, a mental part of that or not. But let's just say concerning. I'm not worried yet. I'm concerned. And, you know, you're always concerned about guys when they have years that are different, like why of it. And sometimes the why of it is something in their swing that they fix.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not. So I think it's a reasonable question. But that's what the coaches and the manager, by the way, the manager is turning 38 today. Ollie Marmol's birthday. Yeah, and I'm about ready to ask him here in a minute what he wants for a present, but I know he's going to say a win today. Yeah, classic answer.
Yeah. When we're looking at this series, Rick, you don't get Paul Skeens on the other side, which is always a nice break. Even though he's young, we know what he's capable of. But you do get a couple of really good younger guns with Keller tonight and Jones tomorrow. But I've been really happy with most of what we've been seeing from the rotation. I mean, Lance Lynn's been really good the last couple times out. We've talked a lot about Miles and his resurgence over the last 6 weeks, which kind of times up with this good run. You know, we talked a lot in the offseason about the rotation, and lately the rotation has been what you needed it to be.
Yeah, they really have. And everybody's going to have a blip. Every starter has a bad day. I don't care who you are. You have a bad day in the midst of, let's say, every fifth start or something like that. So, I mean, we shouldn't be surprised at that. And, you know, Kyle Gibson had one of those his last time out, and maybe some reasons for it too. But, you know, I expect him to be good today. And as far as Skeens is concerned, I just as soon watch him on TV pitching against him. I actually really enjoyed watching him pitch in St. Louis. That was a fun day. But, you know, he is a unique talent. But, again, so are these other guys we're facing here.
Let me ask you to flesh something out for me, Rick. I was watching the other day when Sonny was pitching, and they were saying that Sonny is, rather than trying to paint the corners, he's adopting a style where he's throwing it over the plate and then letting the movement on the ball do the hard work for him. Can you kind of explain what they meant by that?
Yeah, that came from Sonny in his post-game sound after his start before. He said he's a corner guy. He likes to go to all the corners of the plate, up and in, down and in, up and away, down and away. And he ultimately wants to get there. But I think what he's saying is he's realizing that the best way to go there is to throw the ball in the middle of the plate because it's not going to stay there. Interestingly, Jim Palmer used to do that. The great Jim Palmer, a great Orioles pitcher, his philosophy was always throw the ball. He wanted the catcher. He told the catcher, don't set up on a corner, set up in the middle, and I'm going to throw it to the middle, and it's not going to end up there because it's going to move. And I think that's really what Sonny Gray's saying is he's got great think, and he can get run, and he's going to do that naturally. So instead of kind of picking for a corner, he's going to kind of go in to out instead of out to in.
Did you know that our mutual friend Kevin Wheeler once caught Jim Palmer?
I did not know that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
I'm honored. I'm honored to be talking to you.
So when I told Jim this story, I'm going to say like probably 2012, 2013 spring training when he was down visiting the Orioles were coming to play the Cardinals, and I found him on the field. I'm like, I'm going to remind you of this. You're not going to remember it, but you'll remember the circumstances. But he tried to make a comeback after he was in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, I
you remember you. That? So
yeah,
this was early 90s. He was already in the Hall of Fame. And so that means he had been retired for more than 5 years because you can't go into the Hall until you're 5 years out. And he worked out with us down in Miami on our campus in advance of spring training. So I caught some bullpens for him and all of that. And it was actually turned out that was the first time I ever got interviewed by baseball writers because they wanted to know how the Hall of Famer looked.
How did you do on that?
All right, so here's what happened. So first of all, he taught me a couple of great lessons. One, I had never seen a real curveball until I saw his. Because he signaled it to me, and he threw it, and it started up, you know, about where it would be like neck high on a hitter. So I'm a catcher. Yeah. I'm 19 years old. I start to stand up to go catch it because when my guys threw it like that, it stayed up there, and it came back down and almost hit me in the feet. And I caught it, and I'm like halfway standing and caught it. And he started laughing. He's like, "That's a curveball, kid." I'm like, "Yes, sir," but I've never seen one that does that before. So he had that, but he was throwing about 75 miles an hour, and
it's pretty hard.
So that leads me to my very quick Jim Palmer story. I was pitching in a Monday night game of the week, and I threw a pitch that Daryl Porter didn't catch well, and it hit off his arm. And he said on the air, they talked about me pitching. He said, "Well, Horton, you know that last pitch was 90 miles an hour, which there ain't no way it was 90 miles an hour." And in that same broadcast, he said that I threw harder than John Tudor, which probably also wasn't true. But I have the clip of that, and I send it to John Tudor on his birthday.
Oh, man. Yeah, he was such a nice guy. Like, I could not have had a better experience doing that as a 19-year-old kid. He was always, thank you, shake your hand, you know, pat you on the back. He left a voicemail on my dorm because that's how we communicated back then. We didn't have cell phones. So I was, like, telling everybody, "Luke, Jim Palmer left me a message."
How handsome was he?
That's way too handsome. Even then, like, he was, you know, again, 5 or 6 years removed from being a big leaguer. And he pitched in the big leagues, Ricky, didn't he? Until he was 42 or something like that.
So, I think he did.
Yeah.
Which is phenomenal to think about that. The guys like John Smoltz that could last as long as they do and still continue to play this game. I mean, it's a hard game to play. It's a hard game to get ready to play in the offseason and to just think about somebody pitching at 42. I don't get it.
It was funny. The question I get back to the dugout, and there was a guy named Edwin Pope, who was a longtime columnist for the Miami Herald, and a couple of the Baltimore guys were there, and they're like, "Hey, kid, can we? You know, you got time for a few questions?" I'm like, "Sure, whatever." And they go through and ask me my name and what's your major and all that, and they're like, "So, how did he look?" And I'm like, so he looked like a Hall of Famer to me.
Good answer.
I'm wondering if there was somebody there trying to recruit you to do underwear commercials. That's what I'm wondering.
I was 19.
I'm buying those underwear.
I was 19. He was probably 49, and he would sell way more underwear.
He was famous for that. I mean, it was like the jockey shorts or whatever. And, you know, and he was, honestly, he was a big-time pitcher and fun to watch.
Rick, obviously you faced just about all the greats, but who was your first guy you faced where you're standing on the mound going, "You got to be kidding me, I'm facing this guy"?
So I almost said exactly what you just said, pitching to Mike Schmidt in Philadelphia.
Oh, man.
My rookies, I got a start in Philadelphia, and I was pitching against Jerry Kuzman, one of my idols as a kid. I mean, I loved – my family was there, came from New York to watch me pitch in Philly, and Mike Schmidt came to the plate, and it was maybe my second start in the big leagues. I'd been doing some relieving. Walked off to the back of the mound, and I said out loud, I am pitching to Mike Schmidt.
That's cool.
I said it to myself, but I said it out loud. I felt like I had to kind of get it out, because if I didn't get it out, it was going to stay. It was odd that I felt like it was going to stay in me and affect me, but I needed to say it and then hear myself say it and go, okay, I can do this. And I turned around and pitched to him. But he really did kind of put me in awe, because he was the best player of that year and maybe of that generation.
Do you remember the first person to give you a compliment or to pump you up in a way that you're like, I just got a compliment from this guy?
Yes. Okay. It was the Cardinal pitching coach. It was actually the pitching coach, Hub Kittle, who'd been in baseball for 150 years. And he came down to AA and watched me throw a bullpen. And Hub had this raspy voice, and he said, oh, kid, you got it, kid. You're going to make $1 million in this game. That's what he said to me. And I swear I was 6'8" after he said that.
That's awesome.
I found out a couple of years later he says that to everybody. But I didn't know it at the time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I mean, but he was a great encourager. But I'm telling you, it made a difference for me, thinking that, you know, man, maybe I can do this. And I was only about 20 years old at the time. But to hear him say that was meaningful.
That is very cool. Any thoughts on the upcoming series?
Well, I think, you know, the Cardinals had a great homestand. They won 7 out of 10. You have a winning road trip. You'll be happy. I think it's cool to be playing teams in your division. I've noticed a big uptick of fan involvement and everybody's interest and enthusiasm playing teams in the division. And so this series in particular is going to be fun against the Pirates. And, you know, you obviously want to win the series, and I think there's certainly a possibility to do that.
All right, buddy. Have a great call. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
So I will celebrate my 60th birthday on September 6th. Guess, in this case, what, not who, is celebrating their 60th birthday today? The Civil Rights Act.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Mm-hmm.
It's only been since I've been alive.
Man.
So I was in my mom's belly.
Yeah.
When Black people couldn't eat with white people, couldn't marry white people. I was
2 months from being in this world. Yeah.
Yes. It's nuts.
It's almost unfathomable.
Shameful, really.
Yeah.
Totally is. But I mean, like, from our view, I guess that's the good side, right?
It could still be going.
For somebody that's like 50 or 60, you're like, it's unfathomable, which is a good thing. We're moving away from that.
Yeah.
It's still crazy, though, that it's that long in history that people were dumb.
I don't think I want to do a call-in, but I was going to do a call-in sort of apropos of this. I wrote down, why is it that people believe that everyone should live like them?
Oh.
I understand. And given my politics, I tend to squint more at the religious right. But there are people on the left who definitely shove their lifestyles down your throat.
Absolutely.
Being a guy in the middle and a guy who's very liberal socially, I when I say I don't understand, I mean that literally. I don't understand why you can't live where you want to live and live the way you want and let someone very different from you live the way they want to live. They're probably not going to be your next door neighbor, but if they are your next door neighbor, if they're not hurting you, and they're not hurting you by being who they are,
or hurting anyone else, right?
And I understand that, well, I don't want my kids or my grandkids being indoctrinated. I don't blame you, but I also don't want them being indoctrinated into the religious right either. Things seem to make some sense when I was a kid with reading, writing, and the arithmetic, and I think we just need to get back to that. I don't know.
No, I think that's one of my biggest beefs as I get older is, don't force anything on me, but let me force my stuff on you. Right? I mean, how many times have you heard someone say, well, I just don't want their lifestyle shoved in my face, but yet now we got people trying to force religion into classrooms? I mean, it is the same thing. You're taking what you believe and saying other people need to learn what I believe, so hopefully they believe. But that's
and
not
there are people
okay.
who think that your religious views are harmful. Because you could say, well, I'm on the side of God. I'm on the side of right. They're on the side of living this crazy, insane way that God never intended. There are a lot of people, though, who look at your beliefs and think that they are dangerous as well.
Everybody thinks they're right.
Yeah.
Every person, and this is not a shot. I'm talking about everybody. I think I'm right. You know, you think you're right. Like, everyone thinks they're right. Everyone believes with their whole heart that they're right. So how do you prove it? And that's the point when it comes to pushing your own views into other people's lives. Because you can't prove you're right. You just believe it.
Kev, you might want to go home and cuddle your wife. Do you see this story?
A woman, I mean, it sounds good anyway, but
a
okay.
woman whose significant other was not giving her enough physical attention got mad, scratched his face, bit his forehead, and shattered his phone. Forehead biter.
Ugh.
Can't imagine why he didn't want to cuddle with her.
I was going to say, this seems like there might have been more to the story.
She seems so nice and cuddle worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that sounds like a good evening.
234 DGS coming up at the top of the hour. Looking forward to this. We have Tommy Rubicki from Neovitin bringing along Dr. Ryan Fields, who is an oncologist from Siteman and WashU. And we're going to talk about pancreatic cancer and different kinds of cancers and the kinds of strides that we are making and what we still have left to go. Dave Murray's giving us another live look, which means he's not going to be with us. And then we have The Tank with Mike Elam and Braxton Payne. Those two are always great and a lot to talk about, obviously, on The Think Tank today. Stairway to Kevin.
All right, let's do this. You know, you guys know the cliche of the ugly American abroad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading a story about this, like kind of giving people tips on how not to be the ugly American or the stupid American when you're traveling internationally. But then I started thinking about it, and, you know, I've traveled internationally a few times. I enjoy it a lot, but I also like to, like, jump in, and I'm going to learn some of the language. I'm going to do all those things. And I learned as a high schooler, the trick is to try to blend in as much as you can and adopt the language and as many of the things as you can in advance. So I had a good upbringing on that from my uncle, who's a great world traveler. But then I wanted to know, like, why? Why do you guys think we're such terrible, stupid travelers? Why do you think our reputation in European countries, in Asian countries, is as negative as it is? Because I have a bunch of, like, legit reasons. These are not Americans, we're idiots. It's not that. I think there are some good reasons. I'm just curious what you guys think. Like, why do you think we have a reputation for being essentially bad tourists?
Well, I think we are very spoiled here in the United States, and we're used to, like, having things our way. So then we travel, and we probably come across as very entitled. Like, even just going to Europe, and let's say you order a Diet Coke. I've never been to Europe, but from what I understand, they don't really give you a cup of ice.
No. You have to ask for ice, and they look at you funny.
Right. I feel like a lot of people probably, when they're asking for that cup of ice, are like, where's my ice? You know, like, this is just part of the thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like entitled is maybe even a better word than, like, the ugly, stupid American, because I feel like it really just comes down to, we are just so used to having things our way and being the biggest, baddest kid on the block no matter what. And then we travel and it's like, oh, you mean we're not the center of the universe? That's weird.
Any thoughts? How much have you gone
not
outside
that I
of the
say
world?
On the air.
No, you can say them.
I don't know. I feel like everyone's going to hate me.
Oh, Americans are going to hate you, or are you going to, the world's going to hate you?
No, Americans.
I'll top it. We're fat, sloppy jerks. We flop around the world, and we just, like, we're all super rude. We don't respect, I think, other countries' customs. And I'm not saying, obviously, you know, the hashtag not all of us are like this, but I think there's an outsized number of Americans. And you know, we're used to America being a melting pot. Not really any other country is a melting pot. They are a specific cultural group that live in a specific kind of culture. And we're just used to, in America, everybody gets to do whatever they want all the time. So they go over to another country, and instead of respecting the fact that they are a specific culture that has specific cultural norms, we're just like, nah, I get to do whatever I want all the time.
That's a really smart answer.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some truth to that. Like, if you go to, but it's very specific. Like, if you go to the UK, for example, they're not that different than us as far as lots of different cultures and lots of different types of people living there, right? But if you go to Sweden, for example, well, they're Swedish people, you know, it's a little bit more. And that's, I think that ties into, because I think that there are the reasons you guys mentioned, they're true and they exist, right? Because we are loud. I mean, look at me. You know, Americans do tend to be louder on average, but it's partly because of, you know, just the way that we are culturally. There's a lot going on all the time. But I think there's some other, like, reasons why we get this. And these are not excuses, but explanations for why we are noticeable. Because there's a lot of us. I mean, like, there's tens of millions of Americans traveling internationally every year.
Good point, too.
So these nations are seeing more Americans than they would be seeing someone from Scandinavia or from someone who's from South America or whatever. They're gonna have a lot of exposure to Americans. So yes, we are those things, but there's also a lot of us. We're one of the biggest countries on the planet, so we are going to be prominent travelers, especially in European countries, where they're going to be like, oh man, look at these damn Americans coming. So there's that.
I had someone explain it to me once in Jamaica.
Yeah,
a Jamaican. There was a bartender there we made friends with. His name was Bunny. And by the end of the 7 days, we had been pretty ridiculous. But we'd become pretty good friends with him. And we brought up the whole ugly American thing. And he said, look, I'll tell you if you want to hear it. He said, sure, we can take it. We're Americans. And he said, you're at an all-inclusive resort in Jamaica. We put out all the alcohol we have, you drink more than that. We put out all the food we have, you eat more than the food we put out. You're big and pink and obnoxious and constantly drunk, and you don't seem to notice the natural beauty around you. And we laughed, but that's what he said.
No, and I think that's part of where I'm going, too. That's a great point, is that when we're on vacation, we are sometimes the worst of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We're just like, forget it. We're going to do, especially when you're going to the Bahamas.
I have been that person.
Yeah.
I was a scourge the first time I went out of the country to Negril, Jamaica, this trip I'm talking about. It was constant everything, but I was on vacation. And my life was hard, and I'd never been anywhere like that. So you can forgive it, but it doesn't mean it's not a real thing.
And again, I think all of this ties into other natural things, though, right? Like, think about how big our nation is. How much of our country is actually, quote-unquote, tourist area? Would you say maybe 10%?
I don't know. I was going to say, like, the whole thing.
No, but I mean, like, where international travelers are going to gravitate to. They're going to gravitate toward New York, L.A., Miami, right? They're not necessarily, I mean, they might do some of the landmark things. But, and by the way, having lived in Miami, I can spot a European tourist in an instant. They stand out, too, when they're here. But they're not in St. Louis in numbers, right? They're not in Chicago in numbers. They're going to be in those areas. But where we go, these countries are small. So when you go to, I mean, geographically, Japan is tiny. So if you got a million Americans there over the course of a summer, it's going to be pretty noticeable because you're all going to be on top of each other. So that's part of it.
In Tokyo, there's a lot of Americans.
Did you see anyone that embarrassed you?
Yeah. We're at the train station and it's very busy and people rely on the train to get to work, to get home, and everything runs on time. So it's like, stay out of people's way.
Right.
There was a huge group. There's probably 10 Americans, and they all had big roller luggage. And they just decided, while they were going to kill 15 minutes or however long it was, that they were just going to sit on the stairs in the train station and block everyone's path. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything to them, because then that's a scene and that's embarrassing. And who am I to be like, you're doing the wrong thing here. I'm the etiquette police. But it was like, could you not, like, just look around at what everyone else is doing and do that?
And that's also how we act here.
Right, exactly.
This is what we Beth, that's the
difference. You could
see
it happening at Six Flags or something.
We saw that in Italy, right? We were doing tours, and there's tons of big tours in Italy, right? You'll see all these groups of tourists, and some of them are European tourists, some of them are American, but you can always tell the American tourists. I could tell the difference in the group. Clothing is a number one thing for sure. But also because they would just stop in the middle of the road. Like, just stop. And, like, everybody's trying to walk, and now all of these hundreds of people have to go around you because you just stopped as a group. And I think there's a lack of awareness, but we do that here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's
just go to Schnucks.
Right. Go to Costco if you want to see this dynamic in play in a smaller category. But here's another thing, though. We also don't learn second languages. Other countries do. You know, almost everybody in Europe speaks at least a little bit of English. So when you go there, but you make no effort to learn anything about the language, or you make no effort to, you just expect everybody to speak English, that's insulting to a lot of people. And I know it's hard, like learning new things, but they all did it. And that's not necessarily like a grown American's fault that our system doesn't emphasize language when you're coming up, right? Because kids in France, for example, they're starting to learn English primarily. They're learning that in grade school, and they learn it all the way up.
Do you think we should require
it? I would, but I'm also a language nerd who, you know, just I think it helps you understand things better when you do that. And that's part of the thing, though, and that makes us fit in less, which makes us stand out more. So even if we're not being obnoxious, just the fact that you don't have the ability to communicate makes it an awkward thing and makes a negative impression. Nobody can be fluent in every place you want to go visit, but you can make effort to learn phrases. You can learn like how to ask for the bathroom or where the restaurant is or what direction you need to go. And I think when you add all of it up, like the natural, just there's a lot of us, you know, we are naturally a place where, look, man, we talk a lot of crap too, right? Like Americans, like we like to thump our chest. We like to be like, we're American and we'll wear the flag and all that. And that's another thing that stands out because we're always dressed in a certain way. And so are Europeans, though. Like they have their own way of dressing. When you see a person from, I can see someone from Germany or whatever, and I know they're from Europe. The minute I see them walking down the street, just based on how they dress, the kind of shoes they're wearing, things like that. And it's not a negative. It's just noticeable. Well, when you multiply that by tens of millions, because there's so many of us, you get to, you kind of notice the difference.
So yesterday, Wheels was talking about where we stand on neighborhood fireworks and such. We've had the first casualty. A 66-year-old man in New York lost his left hand while lighting fireworks in his backyard. Now, that reminds me of is when I was a kid, we would have fireworks. But the parents, being World War II parents, would be like, and I remember very distinctly, one of the dads, not mine, but one of the other dads said, every July 4th, someone loses a hand and then walks off. And I thought he meant in our neighborhood.
Oh.
And I was like, this seems insane.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to be the sacrifice this year?
Yeah, let's not do it.
Right.
What God are we sacrificing the phalanges to? Like, let's get something out of this. Want some fun facts?
Yes.
Yeah.
This one really surprised me. Brushing your teeth did not take off, I'll make it a little quiz, until, in the United States, until what happened? So how long have we been brushing our teeth? I'll just tell you. World War II.
Oh my goodness.
When the soldiers were in World War II, they were given toothbrushes and toothpaste. And when they came home, they brought the habit with them. Prior to that, most people did not brush their teeth on a daily basis and some at all. Isn't that something?
Yeah, that really is.
It's a lot of fake teeth when you get older.
I bet the dentists were so mad.
Right?
Yeah.
They're like, I can't even try to get you to floss.
Or not. Because your teeth would just rot in your head.
Oh, that's true.
So they're probably pretty happy about it. Cup Noodles is coming out with s'more-flavored ramen.
Ooh, interesting.
That just kind of turns your stomach, doesn't it?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
Ramen's supposed to be salty.
One for you, Wheels. Tom Morello says that metalheads have to get their stuff together and do their part to change the world. You are not a witness to history. You are agents of it. And so far, you are losing the battle.
Okay.
Why is that metalhead's fault?
Because that's who follows Tom Morello.
Is that their problem?
Yeah. I mean, even though that's not Rage was not really fully that, but I get it. He's a guy that always had about, he's always been about social change and social commentary. That's what Rage Against the Machine was about. So, yeah, most metalheads are not about that.
The best thing is when people finally discover what Rage Against the Machine was talking about.
Not,
they're like, oh, they're woke now.
Did it's you
like,
not well, read the lyrics that you were singing along to?
I regret to inform you, they've been woke for a while.
They might have been one of the initial wokers.
The families of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman are upset that O.J. Simpson was included in the In Memoriam segment at the BET Awards. Nicole's sister said that whoever made the call should be fired.
It was weird. Like, we know that he did things before the murders, but, like, that's just weird. Like, yeah. where do you honor someone ever that's been accused of murder?
Yeah, and I guess it was, like, pretty silent, and then there was a small smattering of applause. People were like, okay, I guess we should clap, but it just sounds very awkward and unfortunate.
Stranger Things Season 5 will have 8 movie-length episodes.
Nice!
Oh, cool.
So, 8, 90, minimum 90-minute episodes.
All right.
Man, those kids are getting to be pretty old.
I know. They have to advance the storyline pretty far, right?
I think Millie Bobby Brown is, like, married now.
She is.
Yeah.
Is she?
Yeah,
is
Devon Jovi.
Was she, like, 20?
Yeah, she's 20 or 21.
Just about. How has it been? I do with every other series, I bagged out after the first season.
The most recent season I thought was great.
It's fine. Yeah, it's good. It's all right.
Yeah, it's worth it. I would say it's because I had to watch the first season. I was like, it's pretty good. And then I fell off. And then I watched it all like last summer, the summer before, whenever the last season came out. And it was really, really good.
You know, little Steven Van Zandt
from
E Street Band and from Sopranos came out with a really interesting thing today. He said that for his entire life, he's been carrying guilt because he quit the E Street Band in 1994. Right after Born to Run and all the success.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he felt that he really missed out on a lot being a huge rock star and that he let Bruce down, but that if he hadn't done that, he wouldn't have done his solo albums. He wouldn't have done Sun City.
Probably wouldn't have done The Sopranos.
He wouldn't have done The Sopranos. He wouldn't have done Lilyhammer, and that's been his whole career.
Yeah.
I thought that was really interesting to hear someone who has been undeniably successful say that he has really suffered with that mentally, feeling like, well, I could have been a rock star, but instead I was a movie star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, but he still is both. And I think that's an interesting lesson too, though, right? There can be things that you feel like you missed out on, but that missing those led to other doors that opened up that you got to do things you wouldn't have otherwise gotten to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, I like him, and I get, like, he should be able to speak freely and stuff, but at a certain point, it's like, yeah, you still got an amazing life. Like, just focus on being grateful for all the amazing things you've been able to do, because so many people listening to this, watching his interview, are probably going like, oh, well, what do you think of me then if you're so disappointed in your life?
Interesting statistic. Evidently, a real place, not just like a bunch of bros, did a study of Chipotle and found that the Chipotle meat will vary by 87%.
What does that mean?
Means that sometimes you'll get 87% more, sometimes you get 87% less.
Okay. I thought you meant what was in the meat, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
That does not sound good.
It's like their whole thing is like, we have clean, healthy meat.